This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
In the Sefer Kohelis, the author, King Solomon, HaMelech Shlomo, examines the meaning of life. And he begins by examining life without religious content. And only at the very end, when he finds that there is no meaning to life, does he resort to religious content as the only means of instilling some kind of value into life. And one of the very important turning points in the Sefer, in the ninth perek, he says, Shavti v'ro'oi, I have turned around and see tachas ha-shemesh, in this material world in which we live, this world governed by laws of matter and physics, ki lo'i la'kalim ha-meiretz, that it is not the lightest of people who are the best of runners, v'lo'i la'giborim ha-milchomo, and not the most lo'i la'chachomim lechem, and wise people are not necessarily the ones who have what to eat. V'gam lo'i la'nevoinim osher, and men of intellect are not necessarily the ones who are wealthy. V'gam lo'i la'yoidim chen, and the ones who have great knowledge are not necessarily the ones who inspire followers. Ki eis vofega yikre eskulum, for time and tragedy will strike them all. That's Shlomo HaMelech in his rather typical pessimistic style during the bulk of his Sefer. The Medrash in today's Sefer tells us that pasuk was inspired by Shlomo HaMelech's study of Moshe. There is a certain tragedy in Moshe Rabbeinu, particularly at this stage of his life, and that it was through a study of that tragedy that Kohelet made this remark, that there's nothing that one can do, that at the end of the day, irrespective of one's wisdom, irrespective of one's power and one's strength, there comes a time where fate will win, and there is nothing that any man can do to escape the clutches of fate. Medrash says, Shavti uro'oi tachas ha-shemesh, on this posuk, I have turned and see beneath the sun, ki lo'i la'kolim ha-meiroitz. Omer Rabbi Tanchuma, says Rabbi Tanchuma, that same Rabbi Tanchuma that we had earlier on today, Rabbi Tanchuma as he was called then, ha-mikro ha-zeh medaber b'moshe. This posuk is talking of Moshe. Ketzad, for example, Esmoel hoyo oile elorakia kneshe. Picture Moshe Rabbeinu in his prime, says Shlomo HaMelech. A man capable of spanning the entire gap that exists between us down here and the heavens above. A man who was able to soar to the heavens like an eagle. Achshav, that was only yesterday. He hasn't aged since then, and he hasn't become ill. He hasn't weakened since then. He's lost none of his faculties. And now, Ayom Mevakish Lavir is Hayardein Veinu Yochid. Now, all this poor man wants to do is cross a little river. And he hasn't the strength to do it. He hasn't the power to do it. A man who is able to rise to the heavens and deal with God in his own territory now cannot even cross the river. Esmoloyu malochim rasitim lefonov. Yesterday, angels trembled before him. Ve'achshav hu oimer ki yargolti mipnei ha'afachim. And now he expresses his fear of the anger. Esmol irgi boirim olo chochom v'yorod oiz mavtecho min ha'shamayim. Ve'achshav nitlo mimeno v'nislo v'yoshua bin Nun. Before, he was a man who was able to, with all his wisdom, he brought down the Torah for us, and now that wisdom has been removed from him and is being given to his Talmud, to Yehoshua. He no longer possesses it. Yesterday he used to talk like a wealthy man with all the confidence, the self-esteem and stature and status of a wealthy man. He used to talk to God. Shuv mecharoi napecho, he used to instruct God in the imperative. Return, O God, from the anger of your from your anger. Slachno la'avin ha'amazeh, again the imperative, forgive this nation. V'achshavu metziach kerash, now when he turns to God with a request for his own forgiveness, not only is there no imperative, but he uses the term va'eschanon. Do me a favor. Just do it for me as a favor. I don't deserve it, but do it. Asa yimichinom. Just do it for me. Esmel hoyo yodea hech leratzis es boiroi. Yesterday he knew how to appease the Ribbono shel Olam. How to get God to change his mind. How to appeal to God. How to work with the Ribbono shel Olam. Kumo Hashem, he used to say. Arise, O Hashem. Shuvo Hashem. Return, Hashem. Yachshov mishin ischanen kol shivas yomim. And now for 7 days he's been pleading for his own life. The Seif Omele HaKadosh Baruch Hu, at the end Hashem says, Ein korvu yomecha lamus. The game is up. It's time for you to die. There's nothing we can do about it. Moshe has failed. In all the areas in which Moshe had superlative strength, here at the end of his days, he's not able to use one of his talents. He's not able to use one of his abilities. He's not able to use one of his kirchis for himself. And that picture of Moshe strikes Shlomo as the essence of tragedy. To see a man in the prime of his life, for Moshe even on the day of his death was still in the prime of his life. There was no deterioration at all, Chazal tells us, not in his strength, not in his faculties, not in anything at all. Moshe was at the prime of his life at this moment. And yet all his talents and all his gifts had just slipped away from him. Why? Korvu yomecha lamus, because time is up. That's it. Have I done anything wrong? No. So what's the problem? Nothing's the problem. Time is up. And Shlomo looks at this and says to himself, if a Moshe Rabbeinu can't conquer the ravages of time, who can? And therefore he says, ki eis vofego yikre eskulon. At the end of the day, you can work, you can do what you want, but at the end of the day, no matter how bright you are, and how clever you are, how big you are, how strong you are, how wealthy you are, it makes no difference. Nobody can escape the ravages of time, and at the end, ki es vafego yikre es kulum. Time and tragedy strikes them all. Why is that so? This is something which Moshe Rabbeinu battled with his entire life. For Moshe's aim was not only to achieve perfection himself, but also to bring the world to perfection. That was his aim in life. That was his purpose, more than anything else, was to bring the world back to the perfection which it knew before the time of Adam HaRishon. Moshe Chaim Lutzatu speaks about that aspect of life, both in the Mislis Yeshorim and in the Derech Hashem, of how our function is not just to achieve perfection with ourselves, but as we elevate ourselves, so through our relationship with the world around us, we actually elevate the material world. We raise the world back to the standards that it used to be, and potentially even to higher standards. And that was Moshe's aim, to get the world back to where it was before the sin of Adam HaRishon. And that being the case, it was terribly important to Moshe to know that man could master fate, that man could conquer the ravages of time or anything else. Because of the ravages of time and tragedy, that's all a consequence of the chet of Adam HaRishon, of the sin of the first man. That's where it all started, that's where it all came from. And if man cannot do anything about that, that would make life absurd. And so it's terribly important for Moshe to know and to believe that the human being can conquer fate. And he devotes his entire life to trying to achieve that. And he believes he's gotten there. He's gone up to Shemayim. He's come back again. He's argued with Hashem, he's battled with Hashem, he's made Hashem change his mind. He's averted tragedy, he's averted the destruction of the Jewish people time and time again. He's able to conquer what would appear to be fate. Each time he's able to do it. And therefore Moshe Rabbeinu assumes with absolute certainty that his time will never come to die. That he has found the secret of the conquest of death. That man can, through his own tzidkus, man can, through his own righteousness, conquer everything, conquer all aspects of fate, including death itself. And although he knows that he will not be allowed into Eretz Yisrael, he knows that the Am Yisrael are going to go, he has appealed to Hashem to allow him to wander in the desert like an animal, to do anything but just not to die. And we find in the Medrash also in this week said that Moshe's total astonishment when Hashem says to him, Hein korvu yomecha lumus Moshe, your time has come to die. That came to him out of the blue, that came to him with such shock, for it went against everything he lived for. And Moshe says to Ribbono Shloim, Achar kol oisei hakovod v'oisei hagvura shero einai ani meis. After all that glory and all that honor which my eyes have seen, do you want to tell me that I'm going to die? Have I not overcome death already? I've been to Shemayim, I've seen your heavens. I've brought the Torah down. Who could survive such a thing? I did it and I survived. Is there anything in the world I can't survive? Have I done anything wrong? I did one little thing wrong. I struck the rock instead of speaking to it. For that you've punished me and not allowed me into Eretz Yisrael, a terrible punishment, which I have accepted. But what have I done to deserve death, says Moshe Rabbeinu. Is there anything else wrong I've done? No, says the Rebbeinu, nothing else wrong. Vatein korvu yomecha lumus. It is the fate of all mankind to die, and you are no exception. Mi gever ke Avrom, she yorad v'kiv shum ha'ish, v'nitzu, v'achar kach v'yigvo v'yomus Avrom. Is there any man greater than Avrom who threw himself into a furnace of fire and he survived that? So you might say Avrom learned how to conquer fate. He could conquer the laws of nature. He could conquer the laws of physics. He knew how to jump into a fire and come out unscathed. Yet, v'yigvo v'yomus Avrom, Avrom's time came and he died. Migevel ki Yitzchok sheposhat tzavor al hamizbeach. Can you think of any man greater than Yitzchok? Who came to within a hair's breadth of death, who lay on the altar, bound, ready for sacrifice, and as his father was a millimeter away from slaughtering him, he's miraculously saved by godly intervention. Surely such a man has learned, is able to overcome the powers of fate, and yet he took it for granted that he would have to die, and he prepared himself for death. It didn't come as a shock to Yitzchok. Mi gever ki Yaakov shenispagesh im hamalach? What about Yaakov who met with an angel and battled with him and fought him and beat him? Could he not also beat the angel of death? Could he also not beat the Malach HaMoviz? And yet by Yikrivu Yimei Yisrael Lomus, the time for Yaakov came. All these people, Avrom, Yitzchok, Yaakov, people who mastered the laws of everything, people who were tzaddikim also, people who didn't put a foot wrong, and yet death didn't come to them as any great surprise. Why are you so shocked, Moshe Rabbeinu? What is your surprise? Why are you resenting death so much? Why are you battling against death so much? Why, Taka? As I said last night, we've taken this medrash previously, or this group of medrashim previously, to display Moshe Rabbeinu's value of life. How much he valued life and how attached he was to life. The enormous potential that life holds for a tzaddik. But that isn't altogether satisfactory, because the Ribbono Shel Olam has a good taina, Moshe Rabbeinu. Why are you different to Avrom, Yitzchok, Yaakov? They didn't battle for life. They lived a full life, and when the time came, they accepted death with a certain acceptance and understanding, and that was it. There's no big deal. Why is it bothering you so much? But we need to understand Moshe and his life's work. The Gemara says in Brachos on Daf Zayin that it was Moshe who asked the Ribbono Shel Olam, among other things, when he said, "Hareini Noos Darkecho, show me your ways, Ribbono Shel Olam, show me how you operate." What he was questioning God was on the phenomena of Tzadik, Tzivloi, Tzadik, Raloi, Rosho, Tzivloi, Rosho, Raloi, that there seems to be no relationship between the prosperity of people and their moral and religious righteousness. There were righteous people who suffered and there were righteous people who had it good. There were bad people who suffered and bad people who had it good. And to Moshe, that apparent chaos presented an enormous problem because it suggested that man cannot triumph over fate, that there is a power that rules over man. And that them, irrespective of whether you're a tzaddik or you're a rosho, there are certain things which are going to happen, come what may, and there's nothing you can do about it. That's what that question suggests, and that's why Moshe was so troubled by it. Are we suggesting, says Moshe to the Ribbono Shel Olam, that tzaddik veralo, that you can have a man who's a perfect tzaddik and he can suffer? That means that the suffering doesn't come from you. That means that there's some program in the environment, there's some program in the brio, which is inevitable and which cannot be escaped no matter what you do. And you can have a Rosh who has it good. That means it's not reward, that means it's just his good fortune. He was born into a certain constellation which made it inevitable that he was going to have that goodness, irrespective of his wickedness. But what kind of moral relationship have we got with you then, Ribbono Shel Olam? That means that man cannot conquer nature. That means that man cannot conquer fate. And how am I ever going to get the world back to where it needs to be if my own actions can't overcome these forces and these powers? This is what troubled Moshe. And as we've learned that Moshe, according to Chazal, was the author of Sefer Iyov, and this is what he explores in the book of Iyov as well. What is it? Can man overcome it? Can there be a tzaddik who suffers? And how does he deal with it? And how does he work with it? And how does he resolve it? This is of prime importance to Moshe. Because this can destroy everything he works for and everything he believes in. And the Ribbono Shel Olam answers him, Gemara Brachos, and says, no, if a tzaddik has it bad, that's because he's not a tzaddik gomer. And if a rosha has it good, it's because he's not a rosha gomer, he's not an absolute rosha. If a man is an absolute tzaddik, there will be no tragedy. If a man is an absolute rosha, there will be no good fortune. But we're dealing with people, there are no absolutes. And we're dealing with people who are 99.9% tzaddik, 99.9% rosho, but not gomer, not absolutely, not dealing with absolutes. And that's the reason for your question, where the Ribbono Shel Olam says to Moshe, that you think you're dealing with absolutes. We're not dealing with absolutes. Which seems to satisfy Moshe Rabbeinu. But if that's the case, then Moshe must say to himself, but I am merely a tzaddik gomer. I only did one thing wrong. I struck the rock instead of speaking to it. And I'm going to be punished for that. I know. But apart from that, whatever I've done wrong, I've been punished for. There's nothing else. Surely I can overcome death. Surely I'm not going to die. Says the Ribbono Shel Olam, no, you are. That poses a terrible threat to Moshe Rabbeinu's philosophy. That means the human being is incapable of overcoming the ravages of time and the ravages of death. Shlomo HaMelech says, exactly, that's what it means. That there is an effect that time and tragedy has, which no human being can escape from. It isn't possible. But Moshe wasn't willing to accept that, and he pleads with the Ribbono Shel Olam. Why is it so? The Derech Hashem in the third Perek discusses. Firstly, the purpose of the human creation, and says that the Ribbono Shel Olam wanted the human being to be Ba'al Shleimusoi, to be master of his own perfection. He explained earlier that the Ribbono Shel Olam wanted the human being to be able to approximate himself. He wanted man to be able to approximate God, to be like God. Absolutely is impossible, but to approximate him. And one of the methods of approximating him is to be perfect. The second condition to that perfection, however, if it's going to be godly perfection, is that he must be independent. if he owes somebody else for that perfection, then he's not godly anymore, then he's a slave. So those are two requirements, that he must be capable of perfection, and he must be capable of mastering that perfection himself, not of having it as a handout. And therefore the Ribbono Shel Olam created the world equally balanced in favor of good and evil, and placed man in it, so that one decision had to be made, and only once, that is a decision in favor of good, that would have tipped the scales, and that would have launched the world into the direction of perfection, which man had achieved for himself. Because man would always be able to say, oh, the Maharishon had the equal choice of good and bad, he chose good for the sake of good. And therefore we are masters of our own perfection, mankind did it, we did it ourselves. And the world would have been launched in the direction of godliness. But tragically, Adam HaRishon chose to drop the feather weight in the other pan and to tip the world in favor of distance from the Ribbono Shel Olam, of doing our own thing, of taking responsibility for our own actions, and he launched the world onto a slippery slope from which we've never yet recovered. And that being done, says the Ramchal, it is now very hard for us to get back to where we were, because firstly we have to get back to where we were, and then we still have to go further, so it's doubly hard. Now there is so much negativity in the world, there is so much material weight in the world, that we don't even have an equal chance anymore. But furthermore, he says, V'ulam milvad kol zeh, quite apart from this, Gozrom midas dino yisvar ha-shemoy, the midas ha-din of the Ribbono Shel Olam has decreed, Shelo yuchlu loy ha'odom v'lo ha'oilom me'ato hagia el ha-shlemus, that man, neither man nor the world can any longer achieve perfection, oidom betzuro shenis kalkolo, while we are still in the form in which we were consequent to our sin, to Adam HaRishon's sin. V'hainu atzuro sheyesh lehem achshav, as long as we take the present form, both man and the world, we cannot achieve perfection. It's beyond us. We necessarily have to go through a transition of decomposition. Man needs to die, and the Bria needs to decompose. That's a precondition for perfection. And the neshama can no longer purify the body, because he has discussed earlier that the role of the neshama is to purify the body. The role of the neshama is not to purify itself. It is to purify itself and elevate everything around it, including its own body. That's its role. And it cannot do that. First, the soul has to depart from the body. And the body has to die and decompose. And then the body can be reconstructed, and then the soul can come back into the recomposed body, which is akrehu, and then the soul can purify the body. We've gone too far. The way we are, we're beyond repair. We can't get to perfection anymore. It is necessary to virtually start again. And the whole world will have to decompose. The Yoshu v'yikonis b'tzura acheres ruya l'shleimus, and it will have to be recomposed in a way more fit for perfection. Balkein nigzar ala odom shiyomus v'yachzu v'yichye. And that's why a man is destined to die and come back to life. V'hu inyan tchiyas ha-mesim. And that is the principle of the revival of the dead, of tchiyas ha-mesim. V'al ha'olam sheyechore v'yachzu v'yichudosh. And that is why the world will have to be destroyed and then recomposed. Hu inyan ma she'omru Chazal, and that's what Chazal said in the Gemara in Sanhedrin. Shis alfe shoni havi alma v'chad choru. The world will exist for 6,000 years, and it will be in a state of destruction for another 1,000 years. I don't know if the present is the state of destruction, or this is still before the state of destruction. But that's what the Gemara says, that for 6,000 years the world will live, which means we've got how long to go? Just a couple of hundred years, not very long. V'lesoif elef shono HaKadosh Baruch Hu chozer mechadesh es olamo. Then for 1,000 years it will remain in its destroyed state, And after that, Hashem will recompose it. And then we'll come to Kriyas HaMesim, and then we will be able to re-establish life the way it was meant to be for those who have merited an afterlife. And that's why, of course, this afterlife now becomes so important. The afterlife is the second chance. So really what's happening is we are only here to earn a place in the future. To finish the job here, we can't. We're sort of in a selection school. From all of us here, the Ribbono Shel'Olam will select those fit to survive all this destruction, those people with whom he wants to start up again. And he's here to choose, to test us. That's what we're here. We're writing an entrance exam. Are we the kind of people who merit forming part of the world to come, of the future world which the Ribbono Shel'Olam will rebuild after 1,000 years of destruction? So we see here, Moshe Chaim Lutzer explains the inevitability of death as well. That the human soul in the present state cannot purify the body sufficiently to be able to complete the job. This came to Moshe Rabbeinu. That piece of information is what came to Moshe Rabbeinu as a shock. He knew that it was very difficult. He knew that most people couldn't do it. But he thought it was humanly possible to do. And that's what he expected of his own self. That he would have purified his body and he would have an Elijah-type death, where he would elevate his body and spiritualize it, rather than to have his body decompose and his soul go up to heaven separate from it, that there wouldn't be that kind of death. And of course, Moshe did have a peculiar death. We don't understand Moshe's kind of death. It wasn't the normal death. In a sense, Moshe came very close to it. But nevertheless, there is a hen korvu yomecha lomus. Behold, your days have come to perish. There is an inevitability, and you are going to die. Some sort of death you're going to die. That's inevitable. Why is it so? Why did the Ribbono Shel Olam deprive us of the opportunity to finish the job here? The original intention was that man could tip the world in favor of good, and he could spiritualize the whole world. We took a wrong turn. Okay. So why is the Ribbono Shel Olam now deprived us even of the theoretical opportunity of being able to reverse it? Why is that so impossible? Why must death be inevitable, irrespective of how great the human being is and how great the individual is? There is a medrash in the third parak of Iyov. Rabbi Yochanan v'Reish Lakish and Yalkut Shimon. Rabbi Yochanan v'Reish Lakish. Why was death decreed for the wicked people? He starts with that question. Why death even for the wicked people? Let them live and live and live, and they'll either do themselves in, or eventually they'll do tshuva. Why death? Why bother with them even? Ela kol zman sharoshoyim chayim, says the Medrash, for so long as the Roshoyim are alive, hem machisim lakadosh baruch hu. When wicked people are alive, they anger Hashem. Once they're dead, they cease to anger the Ribbono Shel Olam. There comes a time where the Ribbono Shel Olam takes their lives, because the anger is too much. They anger him and anger him, and it's not good for the world, and it's not good for them. And then the best thing that can happen for them and the world is that their lives should be terminated. Good, says Rabbi Yochanan. But then why did Tzadikim die? I understand why the Shoyim die, but Tzadikim, we bring Nachas Ruach to the Ribbono Shel Olam, surely they should live forever? Answers Rabbi Yochanan, Ela kol zman sha tzadikim chayim nilchomim im yitzro. Tzadikim are continuously under the most enormous tensions. They can never escape the tension of their Yetzer Hara. They're battling and battling. Every moment of their lives is a battle, a constant battle. V'kivan she'emesim heim ninuchim. And once they die, they're able to rest, they relax. And so the Ribbono Shel Olam takes their lives. So let's stop here a moment. So we see in Rabbi Yochanan a very important principle. That death for the tzaddik and death for the rosha are two totally different concepts. Death for the rosha is an interruption of his life. Death for the tzaddik is a well-deserved retirement. Different thing altogether. Completely different concept. But inevitable for both. Amar Reish Lakish, Reish Lakish took a different line, and he says, "Litein tzchar tzoyv le'elu kiflayim, v'liporo me'elu kiflayim." Death is to give double rewards to tzaddikim and double punishment to the rishoyim. Liten schar tov la tzaddikim shlo yu ruim litoim tam bitzo vekiblu tam bitzo. The tzaddikim get merits because not only because they were not deserving to taste the taste of death, and yet they accept it. That acceptance of something that they don't deserve, for that they get extra special schar. Again, an acknowledgement in the Medrash that death comes even to those who don't deserve it. Even a person who is a tzaddik gomel, death comes. Whether he likes it or he doesn't like it, it comes. And therefore, he gets extra special schar for accepting that. And to punish the Rishoyim double, Shaloi yu tzaddikim ruyu litum tam miso, because tzaddikim were not deserving to taste the taste of death, but gomu lohem lomus, and they caused the tzaddikim to die. Here we have an insight in the Medrash as to what's going on. Why is this death so inevitable? The Medrash has acknowledged that it's undeserved by the tzaddikim. So why do they die? Rabbi Yochanan said, because it's retirement. Yeah, but you see, so there are many tzaddikim who don't want to retire yet. So let them carry on. No, Moshe didn't want to retire. He wanted to carry on working. But the Rebbeinu Shlom says, "Hein korvu yomech alamus." Why? Says Rabbi Reish Lakish, the Rishoyim are the cause of it. The wicked people in the world are the cause of it. What did they do to cause the death of tzaddikim? Reish Lakish goes on reasoning. And he says, because the Yigzim Bisar Rishoyim v'lo el tzaddikim. Why is it in fact that the Rebbeinu Shlom hasn't decreed death for the Rishoyim, for the wicked people, and leave the tzaddikim to live as long as they choose? And the Medrash gives the most amazing answer. And in this two lines of Medrash, we have the reason for the inevitability of death. Elo kadei shlo yomru harishoyim tluma tzaddikim chayim ela bishvil sheim besaglus mitzvus ma'asim tovim. What do you think will happen? Imagine tzaddikim live forever, and the Rishoyim don't. What are they going to do? The Rishoyim are going to put aside vast amounts of money in all the research institutes in the world to study the longevity of tzaddikim. What is it that gives them long life? As it is today, people are so obsessed with health and with longevity that if anybody lives or has some kind of secret for good health, A, he makes a lot of money, and B, people study it. They want to know. Everybody wants to copy it. Can you imagine if somebody had a secret for eternity? Somebody's learned how to defy death. Can you imagine what schools, what universities, what medical schools, what research would be going on to figure out what it's all about? And what would they find after years of research? That the reason for their longevity, there can only be one thing that can be attributed to it. It's not cholesterol, because they all have a good chance on Shabbos. It's not exercise, because none of them exercise. It's not that they don't smoke, because some of them smoke. What is it that causes them to have this longevity? They will have to come to the conclusion, Ela Bishvil Shem Besagdim Mitzvah Samas and Tzadikim, because they keep the Torah. That is the only common denominator they will find between all the Tzadikim. They keep the Mitzvahs. Af'an in the Sagil Mitzvah Samas and Tzadikim, the Rishoyim will then say, so let's all keep the Mitzvahs. If it can give one eternity, it's worth it. For that, they'll be prepared to do it. People are prepared to do all sorts of crazy things for good health. Imagine if they could get eternity. You would think the Rebbeinu Shlom would be very happy. So the Rishoyim will do tshuva. V'nimtzeis asiyah shelo lishma. And you know what will happen, says the Midrash? People will be keeping the Torah for the wrong reasons. So rather the Rebbeinu Shlom made tzaddikim die as well. What does it bother the Rebbeinu Shlom though? Imagine what a world that would be. The tzaddikim will live forever, and the Rishoyim will imitate the tzaddikim. In every way they can, the Rishoyim will imitate the tzaddikim for the wrong reasons, true. But imagine such a world where everybody is frum, and everybody is moral, and everybody is ethical. The difference between the tzaddikim and the Rishoyim will be the tzaddikim are doing it for Shem Shemayim, and the Rishoyim are doing it for the sake of good health. That's all. Both eating kosher, you'll say to the one, why do you eat kosher? You'll say, it's for the Torah. You'll say to the other, why are you eating kosher? It's good health. Both keeping Shabbos, why are you keeping Shabbos? It's for the Torah. Why do you keep Shabbos? People seem to live long if they keep Shabbos. Terrible thing. So every Jew in the world will be a Shomer Shabbos. Everybody will be an Eichel Kashrus. Everybody will keep all the halachas, every one of them, every se'if in Shulchan Aruch will be kept in all four sections of Shulchan Aruch. Just some will be doing it lishmo and some not lishmo. Imagine what a world will that would be. Comes to the Bereishis and says, oh no, no way. We're not going to allow that kind of business. People aren't going to be sincere. Let the tzaddikim rather die. So that the Rishoyim won't notice the secrets that lie in the Torah. We don't want them to see it. What kind of game is this? And with lishmo, bolishmo, leilek adam b'teira mitzvahs akish. The Gemara itself says a person should always do mitzvahs even if it's for the wrong reason, because eventually you might come to do it for the right reason. So what does it bother the Ribbono Shel Olam? Let people do it for the wrong reason. Eventually they might get used to it, they might quite like it. What does this Medrash mean? What the Medrash means is not so much that they'll come to do it shelo lishmo, but that the element of choice will be removed from Shmiras HaMitzvahs. The keeping of the mitzvahs will then be by compulsion. There would be no choice. If we knew for absolute certainty that if you keep the mitzvahs you live forever, and if you don't you die, then if that the human being should master his own perfection, that he should choose to be perfect, that he should go through the tensions and the strains of seeing the different sides, of being attracted to evil and choosing to conquer it with good, the human being needs to go through all that. It's true it brings tension. It's true it brings misery. It's true it brings all sorts of things. But the human being must go through that in order to be a Baal Shleimus, to be master of his own perfection. And if there would be a clear-cut case for the keeping of Torah and Mitzvot, if you would see it with absolute certainty, the human being would be denied the opportunity of free will. That's the pshat. And everybody would be doing it shelo lishmo. There would be a kfiyo, there would be a compulsion, and man would be deprived of free will. And that's not the Ribbono Shel Olam's intention. He doesn't want religious compulsion. He wants people to feel free to do it, to choose to do it. And therefore the tzaddikim must die. Not one tzaddik can be allowed to escape death. For if one tzaddik escapes death, that will show that man can master his destiny. And if man can master his destiny, then everybody will start keeping Torah and Mitzvahs just out of compulsion and not out of free will. And therefore Moshe's pleas for eternity or for increased longevity fell, so to say, on deaf ears. Sorry, Moshe. Do you deserve to die? No, you don't. Why are you going to die, Moshe? Because there are Rishoyim in the world. Because people will misunderstand your eternity if I let you live. And it will destroy the purpose of life. And for that reason it's necessary that everybody dies no matter what. And there we have this very difficult balance between fate and self-determination. Can we determine our own futures? In certain areas, certainly we can. Our own futures after death, we determine 100%. Everything which happens to us after death, whether we're going to pass this test and be selected for the rebuilding of the world after 1,000 years of destruction, that's in our hands. Absolutely in our hands. What kind of Olam HaEmes we have, what kind of reward and punishment we have up there, every little detail is absolutely in our own hands. Here on this world, a great deal is in our own hands. But there's a great deal that isn't in our own hands. And why it needs to be that way. So Rishoyim need to be able to explain the world scientifically. Because if it weren't for science, there could be no religion. If it weren't for science, religion would be inevitable. And God would rather have science inevitable and religion by choice than to have religion inevitable and science by choice. One has to be inevitable and one has to remain free. And so science is inevitable. Things are predictable. So Shlomo HaMelech, at the end of the day, everybody is struck by time and tragedy. Even Moshe Rabbeinu loses his talents when the time comes to lose them. And nothing he can do, and all his merits, can possibly bring it back again, not for one moment beyond the time that's been allocated to him. Science is absolutely inflexible. And it has to be so, says the Medrash, for if it weren't so, we would be deprived of free will. And there's nothing that can be done to master that fate and to master that that effect. And all this because Odom HaRishon decided to eat from the tree. That featherweight of a choice in the direction of wrong, for all the good reasons that he had to do it, launched the world into this situation where there exists Rishoyim. Once there exists Rishoyim, then the tzaddik's life is not the same life either. We like to think that we live on islands, we like to think that we are self-determining, we like to think that we're not that affected by others, but that's totally untrue. A tzaddik lives a life of perfection, and yet comes the end of his days and he suffers the tragedy of death. And even the kindest of deaths is tragic. Why? Because they are Rishoyim, says the Medrash. The Rishoyim cause it, the wicked people cause it. Because once there are wicked people in the world, there must be a certain inevitability in the world. Otherwise, if you take away that, then there's no choice in religion anymore. There's no choice in ethics. There's no choice in Tov V'ra. That doesn't become a matter of choice anymore. It becomes a matter of compulsion. And therefore it is essential, since Rishoyim exist, that tzaddikim should be subjected to certain tragedies, certain things. And how responsible we have to feel for one another. That our actions, not only our actions, but our mere existences, threaten others, damage others, and contrary-wise, we have positive effect too. We enrich others, we encourage others, we elevate others. But there's nothing that we can do that doesn't affect others. Our existence is intimately tied up with the existence of others. And that's a sense of responsibility that one needs to appreciate in every aspect of one's own life. That in all that one does, at every moment that one is in existence, never mind when one is acting, even when one isn't acting, one is communicating, one is affecting people, one is affecting the world, either enriching it and elevating it, or damaging it and diminishing it. There's nothing we can do. We can't leave the world untouched. The world bears the imprint of our personality wherever we go and whatever we do. And that's our responsibility, particularly at this time of the year, to become aware of that, to enrich ourselves, and to make sure that whatever we do is an act of enrichment for others. It should never be said of us, chas v'sholem, the tzaddikim have to die because people like us are around. That's why tzaddikim have to die. It should be the other way around. But through the existence of people such as ourselves, the Ribbono Shel Olam is able to propel the world into better days, into richer days, into happier days, and that we somehow, through our own efforts, will have some part to play in that future.